Commissioner Brian Koch, we're meeting for a discussion today with CenturyLink about some service questions that have come up. It is Tuesday, September 2nd, approximately 11 a.m. I don't have any opening comments, but I'd see if my colleagues have anything. Commissioner Chrisman?
I also don't have opening comments.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No.
Okay, I think there's probably a bunch of different ways to do this, but maybe I'll kind of set the stage a little bit, and then Stacy, you can jump in. Is it Stacy gives us, as our consumer affairs guru, gives the portfolio holder, Commissioner Fedorchak, general updates and oftentimes specific updates as it relates to individual portfolios. I have the telecom portfolio, and Stacy and I have been talking quite a bit about a lot of the calls we're getting, questions we're getting about CenturyLink. A lot of numbers, the number of 40, some complaints in the last while, and I guess we understand things happen out there in different jurisdictions for the PSC. We get a lot of discussion about somebody wants broadband service. Well, that's not something we directly regulate. And so some of those are pretty easy to sift through with what is our jurisdiction, what isn't. But in this one, there was some legitimate, I shouldn't say legitimate, some specific issues that came up that caught my attention. So we had the discussion with the three commissioners and Stacy, and we thought it would be worthwhile to have this meeting. So I don't know, Stacy, do you want to have a thought how you want to do this today or Kent, how you want to do this today?
No, I think I'll let them. Kent received information from me last week about all the complaints, so I think he probably has responses prepared. One of the issues was the outages, specifically in the Dickinson area. I have received updates that I think most of those are back online now. I was still sifting through emails this morning, but I think a lot of those have been resolved, but I'm sure you have updates on that. And then the other issue was the letter about some people specifically in the Fairfield area not being offered service at all in that area. So I think those were the two kind of issues that stuck out, and I think we can...
Stacy, do you have updated reports?
Like this one, the chart?
Yeah.
I don't have it updated with all of the ones that were reconnected on Friday, but I didn't have time.
Well, maybe just, I didn't bring that stuff because I kind of...
I could go through here and just write on them really quick and then make you a copy.
Sure, that would be great.
I know the ones that were reconnected.
And maybe while Stacy's doing that, I forgot to take appearances, if you will. Who's all at the table with us today? So I guess we'll start with Kent. I know you're here. I know who you are. Can you throw the mic on, Kent? I'm sorry. He's got to have the green on there.
Okay, I apologize. Kent Blickensterfer with CenturyLink. I am the Director of Regulatory and Legislative Affairs for the Dakotas. On my right is Remek Albitre. He's our area plant supervisor, our new area plant supervisor for Western North Dakota. And on my left is his boss, Terry Van Watermeulen, who is the Area Operations Manager for CenturyLink for North Dakota.
Okay. Ken, could you just walk us through, while Stacy's tweaking that, just the process from your viewpoint on how you'd like our consumer affairs person to contact you and walk through how that should work in a perfect world?
Sure. You
know, sure, the customer can call you, but a lot of times we get the call.
Certainly. And, you know, up until recently, well, first of all, we want to thank the commission for the opportunity to come before you and speak to some of these challenges that we've had out west this summer. Obviously, it's been kind of a perfect storm for CenturyLink between weather and some personnel changes that we made and some ads we had to do. You know, we've had less than ideal results on some of those complaints out west. So anyway, let me start by saying that all the complaints that Mr. Burrell had brought up have been cleared as of the weekend. So all those are closed out. All the outages are closed out, and all those are working. With respect to the letter that you brought up, now I believe there's actually two instances, so we're going to address the letter first. And is that a Roberts case?
Let's just take a break here. Stacy looks like she's ready to make some thought. Daryl's on it.
Okay.
Kent, just a quick, as Daryl makes those copies,
Actually, there is two. Julie Rice. We'll start with that one.
Yep. Can we just take one step back, Kent? And I appreciate the getting all those things done, but it causes right away a quick flag that, okay, why does it have to come to us to call you, then all of a sudden they get cleared up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's good they're cleared up, but why did it take this?
Yeah, well, Commissioner Koch, certainly we we regret that, and it should not be that way. We do have people in the complaint world of our company that handle this. Sometimes things don't happen perfectly, and people get frustrated, and the immediate call is usually to, you know, the PSC. Sometimes it's not even about anything the PSC has anything to do with, but it's a natural thing to call up here. Obviously, we appreciate the opportunity now to you know, completely review this process and make this right. But I guess my answer is it shouldn't take that.
Well, but is it a matter of the text not? Because, I mean, this is not the first discussion we've had over the years on this. Is it a matter of you don't have enough techs assigned? Is it a matter of that you can't hold your techs because the pay that they're drawing from other areas? Because, you know, we're the PSC. We've lost great employees to the energy boom as well. And so I'm just curious, why? I mean, great, but there's got to be some, as you've peeled it back, things that we can learn from so we don't have the same discussion a year from now.
Right. Let me address that. And I can certainly have Terry address it too, since these are, you know, all these people work directly for him and Remick. We did have, like I said earlier, a perfect storm, both with the weather and with respect to the techs. We were minus at least one tech for the most part of the summer due to injury.
And to help you out along that one, yes, commissioners, yep. What we had with that said was, starting out in the year, we did have, for like example, in the Dickinson area, we had one from a illness that was out for, it was 4 months in the beginning of the year. And then also in the Bismarck area, then with that area, we had a technician that was out, or actually that had left the company at that point. And we tried to hire back, and we actually had somebody that had accepted the position and then had decided to go a different direction.
How many techs do you have assigned to North Dakota service area?
North Dakota service area as a whole, I have in my staff, I have 60 people that from a technician basis.
So you have 60 techs that you can deploy anywhere to North Dakota?
No, actually I have 52 technicians that we can use within the state.
Okay. That's good. I wouldn't have guessed that many. So then it becomes a question.
And that includes both our inside technicians. When I say inside technicians, the one are handling our remote offices from the electronics end of it, so forth, to the techs that actually are dispatched out to the customer site. It's including all of that. The ones that handle our business customers.
Okay.
As well, included.
So when the customer call would come in, like our contract is Ms. Brewer, but she certainly doesn't field all the phone calls. I mean, so where does that break point go where customer X calls in and they talk to someone and then they're not happy with it, then they call us? Where do those two points meet? You know, so Stacy would call Mary. Where does that local touch point mean, if I haven't explained that correctly?
I guess to understand where you're going with that question would be, you know, a customer calls into our repair center, which then creates a ticket that goes to our technician to respond to the customer. And if there's issues in what the customer doesn't feel that they're getting the right resolution with that, it can go from there in escalation to the super. It can go a couple different directions. It can go in from an escalation perspective straight to the supervisor, which would be like Remick sitting with us.
Right.
Or it can also go then to our executive complaints group, which would be Mary Brewer, that Stacy interacts with. And then then Mary can collect those and then give answers back to the customer and or give some rebates if we feel that it's, you know, something that the customer is feeling they want some credit on their account or something of that nature, so we can work directly with the customers from a couple different directions.
Is there a period of time where it gets flagged automatically? Because we've had this issue with electricity billing, where there's a number that gets outside the norm where it'll get Remy to say, hey, this is wrong. So, I mean, is there some of these were several weeks long, so why didn't it float up to the hierarchy inside CenturyLink that, we got a problem here?
Actually, and if you can, I'd like to actually address maybe specifically what you're talking about with those, because we do have, there's 23 tickets are on the customer service complaints that are on here that are attributable to one issue, and that was the one that we had with lightning damage.
Okay.
And that one was actually out to us locally to try to resolve. And I know, Blake, you have some pictures and stuff of what we were encountering with the field. It was lightning that had hit a three-mile-long stretch, and it had burned up two terminals, and we had three remote serving terminals that are electronic devices out there that feed a batch of customers in that area. And it also burned up then two repeater housings that feed those cabinets. So we knew about it in trying to find resolve for those customers on that specific issue, and that was the longest of the duration of what we have any of the tickets that, you know, we did not resolve in a timely basis.
How do you guys communicate with your customers in this situation? I mean, obviously you can't call them on their phone. So how do you let them know what's going on when you're going to have an extended outage like this and sort of, you know, weather-related and you know it's going to take some time?
A couple different ways. The technician that has a specific ticket and the repair ticket can contact those customers. There's also, if we have, like in this issue, is what we call a cable fail, which is a batch of tickets that are created in this locale because it takes serving terminals and or addresses in that area then that we have service to, and then it'll collect whatever trouble tickets come in to that one master ticket. And if the customer calls in at that point wondering the status of the ticket, the technician in that circumstance wouldn't have all the customer ticket numbers on that because he'd be dealing with it from a large perspective. But we would have a couple different avenues that way, too, where then Mary Brewer can get involved and we can call Mary proactively and say, hey, you know what, we know this is going to be an issue that's going to be out for a period of time, and that, you know, we would want to, number one, we could do call forwarding for the customer as an avenue in the interim until we get resolve on it if we know it's going to be a longer duration type issue.
So those are options, but do you use those on a regular basis? Do you say, okay, we know this is going to be 10 days, here's what we're going to do to let people know, or is it usually when the customer calls and is frustrated?
No. Your question, Julie, is that the technician is the one who has the ownership in the field then to update the customer, and or then with the help of us and the management team if we're involved in it, like in this circumstance right here.
And what kind of expectations do you guys put on him to do that, or is it all left up to his discretion?
Discretion. I'm sorry, repeat the question.
The technician, is it up to his discretion whether he wants to or does or doesn't update the customer, or is that an expectation that he will?
It's an expectation that that technician will update the customer.
Okay. And I guess, Stacy, in your experience, are these people getting that kind of update from the technicians?
The most common thing that I hear from the customers is that they are given a date. They're maybe told somebody's going to be out there on Friday to fix it, and then they'll report back to me that nobody showed up. And then that's what usually prompts them to call me. And then when they call into the customer service line at CenturyLink, specific to this outage, there was some kind of a recording that they would get saying that this outage has already been reported, we're working on it, and so forth. But they would get really frustrated by that because they couldn't get to a specific person to give them a specific update for their home. So those were the two things that I heard about: specific dates given to them, and then they weren't fixed by that date, and then they were upset. And then when they tried to call, they would get a recording, and that would upset them further because they couldn't talk with somebody. So those are, the two things that I would report back to you that they repeatedly told me.
Addressing what the where you're going with the question of the delayed reaction on some of those, if you look at it, and the customer given a different date than what, you know, we've shown up on that one, it's really more caused the spring. We had kind of a perfect storm of, you had asked about technician resources, you know, with, I told you about the illness and the one vacancy that we had.
But if you have 52 people, that shouldn't be an excuse.
Well, but
I mean, I'm just be good, frank discussion today. That's one of the challenges. If you got all these people, if somebody's down, you should be able to dispatch somebody else.
But you're spread across the entire state.
Understand.
As well.
You should be able to do that. We've got linemen that we can dispatch from Grand Forks to Fargo for a power outage. If you got something at a duration of that long and that big a priority, I think that's reasonable.
Well, and like I said, I guess, you know, looking at it and following my sword, that in this situation with this lightning damage, it was quite extensive, and there was, yes, I would say there was better avenues on how we could have responded with this one case.
And what we're trying, I think, is we're stakeholders in this thing, just trying to learn the process. And I'm glad to hear you've got that many technicians, because I had in my mind like a dozen. So it's good to hear. It just did, because you hear a lot there's not enough technicians out there, and it's perhaps anecdotal, but that's at least one per county if you figure that out. So
well, and you look at, I mean, we cover a pretty good service area as far as population.
Yeah.
We cover Fargo, we cover Grand Forks, we cover Jamestown, Valley City, Bismarck, Mandan, Dickinson, you know, and Wahpeton. So, you need a good crew of technicians to cover that. And like I said, with this circumstance, with this outage, yes, there was different avenues on how we could have pursued it in a more timely basis.
You have to order parts. I mean, I get all there's a natural delay in there. If something like this happens, you probably just don't have this stuff laying around the office. You probably got a special order it in, and it takes time to get it installed. And
well, you're on path there, Brian, because when you look at what we had, Commissioner, with cards, for example, I said there were three remote terminals that we had out of service with that. And we put in and replaced, REMIC, over 60 cards. And I say cards, they're electronic circuitry board type cards that go into that device. And yes, there is some legacy equipment in some of our rural areas that we had to scramble to find all of those cards for that as well, because we didn't know up front from an assessment perspective how many were burned out. And it really was a process to step back and, all right, narrow down how much cable damage we had, then start into the electronics end of it, knowing that we had the cable issues resolved. Now we can start, okay, one device at a time and bring it all back online. So even with an army of, you know, technicians perhaps sent, there's evidence of it that really couldn't have been sped up because of the process we had to go through and the steps.
And it's back to Commissioner Fedorchak's point about just keeping the public aware of what's going on.
Keep your customers informed, and there's a lot less consternation typically.
Agree.
All right, so where were you headed next? And I interrupted you about that?
No, that's okay.
Because, I mean, that's the frankness of it. I think, you know, Stacy does a great job if she has the information. And we get, I mean, Georgia Fisher here called me three different times. I told her every time, I'll call you and I find out information. All we've got to do is get the information. Hey, listen, there was a lightning strike. The stuff is kind of a mess. They're trying to get the parts in as quick as they can. We'll keep you updated. It's just so much easier to handle it that way when we know what's going on.
Yeah, I agree, Commissioner. I think from our standpoint, after reviewing this, I can't go back and say that I think our techs didn't do a good job, or that, you know, I think where we, you know, we need to pick it up is clearly what Commissioner Fedorchak said, is the communication with the customer. If they don't feel like it's being taken care of, even if it is being taken care of, then it's not being taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an area where we're certainly going to focus after this meeting.
Who prioritizes the tech work?
That's an automated system, and things can get escalated through that system, but basically I believe the way it works, and jump in here, as it's kind of a first in, first out, or first in, last out.
It's an automated system that puts different weighting on different classifications of tickets. For example, if when I mentioned cable fail in this outage circumstance, if we have a batch of customers that are out, obviously then that takes precedence over a one or two type ticket in a dispatch out to a technician. Same things if there's different from what we call a circuit or a design ticket, that is a circuit that feeds a business or something, that holds different weighting parameters as well. So,
mm-hmm.
And there's a time value that's estimated on a law of averages through, you know, obviously how many years of research with this and what a technician, an average response, and it adds in travel time, so forth. So there's, yes, to your point, there's a different weighting.
Thanks. All righty. And he's quiet. Good. Keep rolling.
I guess the only other thing I would add to that is with out-of-service type things, when you're asking about the system, I believe voice service is then prioritized.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, you get down to the essential service, right, especially in rural areas, which is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
mostly here.
How do I had asked earlier, how do you guys communicate with the customers when they don't have phone service? How do you? I mean, is that something, does a technician make that call somehow just because he's on the spot? Or do you, as a part of your standard operating, say, how are we going to get a hold of you to let you know what's going on? Email, cell phone, how do you guys do that?
We always try to do a KME reach number, a valid KME reach number, okay, other than the number that's out of service,
mm-hmm,
for that reason, knowing that, you know, we need some other avenue to get a hold of the customer prior, especially to let them know, because we'll give a customer a window of time that we're going to respond. And say, for example, it's a four-hour window. We'd want to let that customer know, hey, you know what, I'm on another ticket right now. I'll be done in about 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'll then dispatch out to your site or to your location. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we do ask for a different KME reach number. It could be a cell phone. It could be a work number.
Right. Do your techs have triggers in their calendars or whatever so that they are automatically, they know? Or how do they keep track of this stuff?
They do, actually. There's a net promoter.
Okay.
It's where's my tech, we call it. And if a customer actually triggers back, or if the tech is beyond their window on time, with that where's my tech, it'll send them a page and or a text to say that, you know what, this next ticket is coming up. The customer, okay, needs to be contacted on that one.
And so they're getting these prompts.
They are getting
some of them are obviously ignoring them.
We have very strict criteria in there that we do not want those, obviously, for, mm-hmm, customer service.
So you can go back to the techs that have ignored them and know who it is.
Correct.
So I hope you'll do that. The techs on the ground who are just, you know, not making the follow-up call to the customers. And if they know you're watching, then they're probably going to be more careful about keeping the customers informed.
Yes, and another thing, we back up when you were asking about, you know, resources. And we did have a perfect storm of a wet spring. We had a lot of cable trouble actually coming in for a period. And we ended up with quite a few cable cuts and a bunch of other things that came forward. And if a technician has a long list of tickets, some of those tickets can flow over to the next day, and the tech won't know that they needed to contact the customer on there. So that's where some of those customer complaints came from that avenue. It all falls back to keeping the proper load for what we can get accomplished, mm-hmm, in a day for those customers for the best service.
Fair enough. All right, where are we headed next, Blake, before you were saying
that? Your technician doesn't see how much of a workload he or she has. They just see the one that they're working on?
They can see it all. To your point, they'll...
So they should know then that they're not going to get done in the day.
If the expectation is, say, for example, the tech's on his 10th ticket and it's whatever time, you know what, enough is enough and there's still four more tickets in there, the expectation is of our technician and or the help with the supervisor to update those customers that we're not going to get to, that we know we're not going to get to, so that doesn't set in a unresolved status for the customer.
Are residential and business lines handled differently? Like at what point would the tech know that he or she just has to work overtime, that this just can't wait?
They'll be able to look at that in their load, depending on, as you know, and anything with service industries, some days go real well, others go very problematic, where you could end up 4 hours on one ticket, unfortunately, and it gave you an average waiting of 60 minutes to complete that task. So it goes on a lot of averages. You hope things flow through. Example, if we get a cable cut and that tech gets pulled off to go on that cable cut because that one kicked through from our priority perspective and the tech is there for 3 hours dealing with that one cable cut, well, then we look at what stacks behind that technician, then it can become problematic.
Like if a hospital's out or something, we're not going to leave them go overnight just because it's 4 o'clock now.
Exactly, and that's what they'll look and see what the task, that's why they can see what they have left, okay, in the system, correct.
Okay, thanks.
Also, Commissioner, on that example that you just cited, a hospital, they will generally be under contract, with service level agreements in their contract, and so those have they do get treated a little bit differently.
I have one question. Do the techs have the authority to request assistance if they start looking at their workload? Do they request it, or is that the supervisor's responsibility to say, well, you know, we've got X amount of tickets. We do know that you're not going to be able to do that. We are going to have to draw somebody else in. So who makes that decision on whether assistance is called in from other parts of North Dakota or South Dakota, wherever?
It's a combination of both. Where you're going on that, it could be our dispatch system that looks at that as well and sees that, you know what, we have a large ticket load and converses with the supervisor and realizes that, you know what, we need to do something to bring this in. If for example, Remick, he supervises the west end of the state, so it might be that he brings technicians to assist if it was Dickinson from a Bismarck-Mandan area to assist with that grid of Dickinson-Belfield for the day if he needs to help catch up tickets from that area.
Okay.
Fair enough. Where were you headed to?
I don't remember.
You were going through this, and you said something else.
Okay.
We went back to the level of service.
Okay. I don't remember what we were talking about.
Okay.
Or at what point we were.
You know, when you were looking at, you know, from a priority basis with customers also in asking that question, we do have service level agreements, and we have different classifications of some techs that handle more of our high-profile customers, obviously, such as a hospital or something of that nature. We call them a customer data tech, CDT, and they handle a little bit of tickets on whether it's a bank or, you know, some other business that we would have that's a high-priority, high-profile because of their services.
I think we've gone through all of these. The one remaining would be the RICE question.
Yes, and I believe actually Rice is the author of the letter. The actual customer is a neighbor down the road. And what we found when we looked in, is that the Runyon case?
Yes.
What we found when we looked into it was that, let me grab my notes. It's possible that a customer service rep looked at the system and thought that that customer was not in our service territory. We have some areas in the rural that are, you know, being switched over from the old rural addressing system to whatever that thing is called that we use now.
And
yeah, and it's possible that that did happen. We did, though, look back and could find no record of any request for service. We did send a construction engineer out to her place. I think her name is Jennifer Runyon. And she was going to draw up some maps and put some estimates together. As of now, she has not still made a request for service. When she does do that, then so basically what the issue came down to is whether or not she was going to have to pay for excess construction. We generally provide... It used to be the first 400 feet free to the network, and then the customer paid after that. Now I believe the current rule that we're under, the catalog pricing that on file with the commission, is we offer a $675 credit towards the first construction. Anything more than that is billable to the customer. So we don't know exactly what that number will be until she actually decides whether or not she wants to put in a request, and then we will be able to draw up an estimate for her.
Okay.
In either case, I could find no evidence that any of our people, at least ones that work out here for Terry or Remick, ever said we weren't going to provide service to any customer.
There was also the Jim Roberts.
Mm-hmm. Same situation.
Same situation in the Fairfield area. He owned a business that was built a year ago and also has residences there for his workers, and he told me that he was denied service. So do you know what happened there?
Yes. We did send the construction engineer out there also.
That was one where we had some, with the business being on the same property, back to Kent's earlier response with addressing when in the old system, when that one came through, from what we were understanding, was that the address, we didn't show that address on file. So it was actually denying that service because of the no address on file. And that's why when from a statement of denying, because it wasn't assignable, and because there was already service at evidently before at that same location under the other on that property, of the other locations on that property. And we didn't then get an order for the new address to come through for whatever reason. They didn't take the address for that new order. And with no order issued, we weren't prompted to go out and do a request for research to know that was there excess construction that would have taken place. We weren't sure. So,
yeah, and while we're at it, we actually have another one that came to, I think it came to Darrell. That is on the opposite side of the state, and that is near Pesek, North Dakota. A Mr. Lund.
Right.
Situation there is that he said he put an order in. Is that the one that said he put an order in a year ago?
Yeah.
We couldn't find any order. That is, however, our service territory, and we certainly will serve them. I think we have cable pairs in the area, and they could be assigned to them.
Yeah. Well, he had said that he had called in several times, and they said we're working on it.
Oh.
And he said at this point, he said it's over a year. He said, how long do they still work on it? And he said, I'm just in. So if there's no order in, I guess I...
And yeah, like I said, I can't speak to that because we don't... Our people couldn't find a record of it anywhere.
Okay.
So how do we button up these three then? Have you contacted all of them?
All of them, yeah.
And then let Stacy know where we're at, I guess?
Yep. Mary Brewer will, and she'll CC me on all of it.
You must have a pretty good map, though. I mean, we went through the broadband mapping system. We've laid out by 8-digit grid where everybody's at, so it shouldn't be hard for you guys to know where these people are. Definitely in your service area. I mean, that's the purpose of that study, is you can look at that map and you can look at it and you know whether it's in that area.
Yeah.
So that's where it's that's why we did that.
These are, yeah, and you're correct, although you're talking about cases of in the Fairfield Exchange, which is a border town case, those can get tough.
Yep.
And you're talking about this Pesek one, and, you know, other than if you're a North Dakota buff, there aren't a lot of people know where Pesek, North Dakota.
Yeah.
And,
but your text should know. When somebody calls in for service, they go to some warehouse number, and you got to know that down to where they're at.
The tech doesn't get that call, though.
Well, the person that gets the phone call, whether they should be, I'm guessing it goes to some clearinghouse, and then it could be a Montana customer, a North Dakota customer, and you could walk them right down in there.
Right. And that is how it should work, and unfortunately with Mr. Lund, that's not how it works. Sometimes the customer will call once and not hear what he wants to hear, and then not pursue it, and so then he'll call the commission later.
Yep.
And then say, well, I called a whole bunch of times. Well, we only have records of what we have records of. If someone didn't put an order in, we certainly wouldn't have a record of it, certainly not a year later. But it's an unfortunate situation, and we'll rectify all three of those.
How many customers do you have in North Dakota?
I don't know that we say that number all the time. I can give you a broad idea of access lines, you know, minus wholesale, but it's just under 100,000.
Okay.
So I'm curious about the fellow who, it's been a year later and doesn't have service. I mean, he must be getting service from somebody else.
Is this the Pesek one?
Or using cell phones. In the case of the Fairfield business, he said he's been using cell phone the whole time.
And how long has that been?
A year. Since he built his business, yeah.
And does that he feel like he's been waiting for a year for service from CenturyLink? Or does he feel like, okay, I'm going to take another stab at this. I tried it, and now I'm going to
take
back.
Another stab at it, because he said he had requested it and had been denied. And then when Miss Rice wrote her letter and sent it to all the papers it kind of was like, oh, yeah, I'm one of those people she's talking about. So then he called and said, I had requested it a year ago and was denied. And so then I filed it for him at this point. And so it's...
Is he the one that you said you don't have the request for service?
No, that was the original.
Okay.
The first one.
That was one of the Fairfield ones.
Yeah. Okay. The Roberts case, I think I just got over the weekend or just before the weekend.
It came in Friday.
Yep.
Friday.
Yeah, Mary sent it over to us on Friday morning.
Yeah, it was recent.
And remind me, he requested service and was denied errantly. You shouldn't have denied him, but you guys did.
Well, whoever the rep he talked to on the phone, his initial contact with the company, I'm guessing what happened was they looked it up and said that's not our service territory. Oh. Instead of saying, no, we won't serve you, although it may have certainly sounded that way.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, shouldn't have happened.
Is there some way to flag that area now that we know that the Fairfield area has had this problem numerous times so that it doesn't keep occurring, or what can you do, because we've had three or four now,
right,
you know, with the same problem, so it'd be nice to not have it keep happening.
Right. it's not a real heavily populated mm-hmm. area. Our hope is that we are actually in negotiations right now with a neighboring co-op who is doing some overbuilding around that area, and we may redraw some exchange boundaries to make it easier for them. So that should take care of some of it. I will talk to Mary, and we can see if we can put a system warning in for that area. I don't really know how that works, so I would be just making it up right now.
Because I think that is a developing area. Sorry, Commissioner. I think that is a developing area, kind of in the oil area. So it might be seeing a lot more new people.
It is, but the portion of it that falls within our exchange is not.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can see examples of where confusion could happen in a couple different directions, and having worked with these kinds of things over the years, you know, I can imagine some potential customers, you know, flagging down the spouse of one of your techs at the ball game or something and mentioning they'd like service, and then considering that they've applied, and then when that doesn't ever go anywhere, it's certainly not the company's fault. But on the other hand, if somebody calls in and requests service and whoever takes the call deems that that's not in your area, I think just as a part of employee training, I hope that they don't just take it and dismiss it and it's not in our area and that's just the end of it. It seems to me the customer should certainly have it made clear that that's just not in our area and so we can't do it. But also, I don't know, these lines are drawn. It's not really that much of competitors. Is it possible to just tell the customer who they need to call? If that's the local cooperative or whoever's area it is in, just tell them so that they get why you're denying them service.
That would be, and that does make sense. And certainly, you know, from your perspective, with a smaller company, that would be a lot easier. The person that they're talking to is not someone in Bismarck, North Dakota, or even in North Dakota. So to have the expectation that they're going to know who the neighboring cooperative is to call is probably very difficult.
Well, they must have a map or something that they look at to tell
them. I
think they
use an automated computer tool.
Oh, that types in like the zip code or something?
But the zip codes are divided too. So it would have to be much more in a zip code to determine that it's not your... So at the very least, even if they don't have an ID of whose service area it is, it just might be a training thing that they need to be clear about, that their determination is that this is not a CenturyLink area, and so we're unable to provide the service you're requesting.
The way that, and I'll back up a little bit, the way that the address is for assignment, the way it would route in would be you have a range of addresses. Say, for example, if it's 94th Avenue, and you're looking at from rural address 101 through 201, there'll be that range loaded in. and then anybody calls in from within that range for service, then we would know that that would be our customer and we'd dispatch an order on that. Sometimes we wouldn't, if it's a brand new customer and they're outside of that range, what should take place is that we would do it from a field verification in many circumstances. That would then route out to the field to show that, hey, you know what, and it would be in cooperation with the engineer possibly to where we would know that, you know what, we have a new address here. Is it something we need to add that address in there, or is it something that, to your point, should fall out because it's outside of our area? In a large company, to Ken's point, that doesn't always happen, but that's the way it should happen, is that it is very specifically set up by those 911 addressing areas across the state. So it should be more black and white, but sometimes it's not.
Well, and I think the bigger point is that it needs to be emphasized is it's not in our best interest to deny anyone service. We want all the customers that we can get. And so I don't think that there's an emphasis given to the customer service reps that touch these people the first time that, you know, start from the basis of, well, we don't want to serve them because that's just crazy and you wouldn't be much of a company if you did that. And so, I mean, you start from the standpoint of course we want them to be a customer. But, you know, some of them have also had it trained into them that don't you dare tell anyone, you know, that's in a neighboring exchange that we're going to come serve them, because obviously we cannot cross exchange boundaries the same way other companies can cross into ours. And so sometimes when you're drilling one thing, you miss another.
No, but you hit on the point that makes it very telephone continues to be deregulated, and that's where it's going. And so it's very hard because Sprint could come in there and do a cell service, and there's Verizon, AT&T could come in there. And so there's so many things that are available to them. If they've got the infrastructure there, it's hard to just say call these guys, because then there's other people that could be at play, and you could find yourself in trouble with those companies too.
Certainly. Well, and, you know, the terrain of the area that we're talking about does not lend itself well to
it's not a downtown business.
Telephone lines. Yeah. So, you know, having said that, I think actually that plays into this, although CenturyLink has, you know, no way to change this part of it, that I think that the cellular wireless service out there is generally terrible. And so then that compounds the customer's problem more when they aren't seeing the results that they want to get as quick as they want to get them, and their cell phone doesn't work, and you got to go take the truck on top of the Butte to get your cell phone to work. It creates a challenging situation for the customer, and I feel bad about it. I don't like it. And going forward, we certainly need to focus more with our techs and with everyone about communicating with the customer.
Well, and that's part of the, you know, we get, for example, Mid-Continent's in here, which we have less touch than them on you guys. But the, they've got a full build-out plan of what they're trying to go into. So, I mean, just encourage CenturyLink to figure out what your next build-out plan in North Dakota is, because there's others that are going to be looking at coming to these areas. And the situation will rectify itself. It's whether you guys are going to get part of this pie or not, my opinion.
And that's maybe a discussion for another day, but,
yeah, exactly.
You know, they play by a whole different set of rules and economics.
And that's the law, though.
We do. Yeah.
But, yeah, that puts you at a disadvantage sometimes just because of scale and scope and what's going on. But, all right, so where are we at here? Those letters you're going to follow through with Stacy on, those customers?
Yes.
And
yes,
we've got a pretty good update
of
here.
Of those, and all of those will be followed up on.
And you can rest assured that whenever Stacy feels that there's a number that needs our attention, she'll bring it to one of us, and we'll do this again. But
certainly.
I have a question on this photo of this slightly damaged pedestal.
Would you like to buy it for your antique collection?
Are you asking, is that resolved? Yes, actually, that is, believe it or not.
What's next to it? Is that something of yours, too, or is that something... of some,
I think that's the cover.
That was the cover that blew off with the numbers on it, the orange numbers. But there is...
Looks like there's a good pedestal over here beside it, maybe. But
oh, that might be power.
So I've never heard of one of these getting hit by lightning. And there are thousands and thousands of these all over the state. Is it more frequent than I think, or is this a very,
very rare...
I've
been in the industry for 20 years, and this is the second time that I've seen it happen.
So that followed through and burned things out for how 20, far from
23 customers out of the 40 are direct result of that.
It was about 3 miles what we ended up with the issue on the cable, because when we bond everything together, that's one of our primary principles. We just really, really resonate out there, is that we need everything bonded and grounded, and essentially then that keeps inductance. It with that said, you get a strike, it does cause havoc, because we do ground our pedestals in every so many feet, and with that one it hit, I don't know exactly where it hit, to be totally honest with you. I know that we had two terminals like that, and we dug up the base of the cables. What we were able to do is dig up the base of the cables rather than going out and trying to do the really lengthy replacement of the 3 miles of cable. We actually dug up around the base of that and found good cable at that point, and then re-spliced it up to redo the whole terminal.
So do these need to be grounded better so that they don't, it doesn't travel so far, or is there any lessons to be learned in this?
Even with the grounding is actually what probably saved it from going further more extensively than what it did, because then it did bleed off like it was supposed to in order to go to ground.
Did this hurt any premise equipment at anybody's homes?
No, we didn't actually. We didn't have any issues with it. It was far enough out in the rural, evidently, that it did bleed off before it got to the customer site, but it did zap those three electronic devices that we had. It took surges in those, and that's where we lost all those cards. So those remote terminals, we ended up with 60-plus card zap because they took a surge in there somewhere.
Lightning is a fascinating phenomenon, isn't it?
It is. It can
expensive and frustrating, but
it can do some things that you don't even realize it did.
All right. Julie, do you have anything else?
No.
Stacy, anything we missed here? Okay.
Next time, I wish Remick would stop talking so much.
Yeah, you really drew this out a lot longer than it needed to be.
Dragged out this meeting.
Well, just thank you, gentlemen, for coming in, and we'll just look forward to continued discussion. Anything else from you, all of you?
You know, just that we obviously are going to do a bit of a deep dive on this ourselves, other than what we've already done and the you know, measures we've already taken. And so we'll stay in contact with you about that. Stacy's never going to hear. 40's way too many. I don't know what the number is for 8 months' worth of complaints on the company with as many access lines as we have. 40's too many for us, for sure. It's higher than we've experienced any other summer that I'm aware of. But, you know, so we want to keep it in perspective. It's too many for us. I don't know what a good number is. Zero is a good number. but I don't think you're ever going to have zero.
Ken, for me, it wasn't the number.
Yeah.
It was when we looked at the time frame.
Yeah, and that's, like that part
had,
is...
If we have, you know, 300 outages, okay, but then 2 days later they're all fixed. Or mm-hmm. I mean, it was just that some of these had that duration. And then you tie it back to there's a reason for it, and that's where getting that reason quickly, and then that whole piece, Julie, I mean, it's just... Mm-hmm. That's what jumped out at me. It was not the numbers. Initially it was. But then when you look at it, because we've seen spikes in other, like Xcel Energy has a big power outage. You got 300 customers out. It's a spike. Mm-hmm. But 2 days later, they're back on power. Yeah.
No, that the three-week number is not anything that we need to repeat anytime soon.
I guess in closure on my part also, and to reinforce that customer contact is a very, very important part of our business and what we really stress. And it's something that, you know, there's obviously some gaps here in what was happening with the update to the customer, but that's something that we stress in a very important aspect. That won't continue either.
Okay.
And I was going to reiterate that because, once again, it's what I hear from the customers, so, you know, but I heard that over and over and over again, is that CenturyLink told me they were going to be here tomorrow, and then they didn't show up, and now I haven't heard anything. And it was specific to that outage. So I think just the more communication you can do with them, then it might stop them from calling us to complain, you know, as long as they have information and it's explained to them what happened. You know, this is what happened. Lightning struck. It's really, you know, extensive damage. It's going to take us 2 weeks, just so at least they know that. I think that would help.
No, I agree. Absolutely. It's you're never going to get a whole bunch of calls from everyone telling them how great they services. You and Mary Brewer are both going to get calls from the other way. And then, you know, that's a fact of having outages. Obviously, we'd like that number to be zero, but, you know, reality is such. And working in an environment where cable cuts happen and lightning happens and things like that. From our end, though, hopefully now the addition of Remick, the other thing is we were without a supervisor for the better part of the summer. So we brought him on a couple weeks ago, and we added a tech, and I think we're maybe adding another tech.
We actually are on the east end of the state, so we have all of that in mind. And I was actually down a supervisor and Remick's counterpart in the east end of the state as well. So we are back on board, though, where we should be, optimistic to where we're going forward. So,
so where do you divide the territories for east and west North Dakota, like on I-29 or?
Remick,
is that no? Remick is going to be over into the Valley City, Jamestown, and then his line will be there at that park and managing west from there.
Well, welcome to North Dakota, I think, because you're here for a while and you get to know the people and you never want to leave again.
All right. Anybody else? Go once, going twice? All right, we'll close the discussion. Thank you.